afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you are listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. And it is Monday, April 2nd, 2018. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hi, Melody.
Well, you know, stocks tumbled today, the first day of the second quarter, as technology shares, and I guess there's, do you think there's any global trade tensions that might be dragging down these major markets a little bit lower? The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell over 700 points today. It did come back. We'll hit those numbers here in just a little bit. But after logging its biggest quarterly loss in more than 2 years, the S&P 500 lost almost 3%. The NASDAQ declined a little over 3%. And they're all in negative territory for 2008. And so gold did well today. Were you going to say something?
No, I beg your pardon.
All right. So gold today was up off the low, or off the high, I should say. We had a high of 1,345, and we're currently at 1,342, up $15 at 90 cents. And silver was up 27 cents today at $16.72. Platinum was up $2 today at $937. Palladium took a whacking down almost 2%, down $18 at $941. It's getting ready to break below that platinum level. And for those of you who took my advice and bought platinum, good for you. For those of you who didn't, there's still time. There's still time. It's trading below gold. And I think you're going to see that reverse itself. And it'll at least get closer. It's going to close the gap. Anyway, but palladium certainly took it hard today. USDX today is stronger now. It was weaker earlier in the day, but just by a little, 0.07 at 90.05. Crude oil took a hit, down 1.85 at 63.09. And the markets right now, there's still some numbers coming through. They were able to pull it back down from that 700 points to the downside at 459 points negative, 23,644. The NASDAQ was down 2.75%, almost 200 points, 193,6807.70. And, of course, that's where all the tech technology companies are located. The S&P was down 58 points at 2,581, down 2.25%. 10-year yield, 2.73%, nothing exciting there. Euro is 123, that was also negative 0.09. European Asian markets, not, you know, Germany was strong, but the Fear and Greed Index is still trading at 8. And crypto, Bitcoin was up, but it's still below 7,000. So a big drop there for those Bitcoin, for the Bitcoins, for those cryptocurrencies. But you had Amazon, they shed about 4.3%. As we've heard about Donald Trump taking to Twitter to blast the company's business practices. Tesla slipped 4.1% following rebukes from the National Transportation Safety Board over the disclosure it made about a fatal crash involving one of its vehicles. Facebook, they've been having difficulties. They fell 2.2%. And let's see if there's anything else. Caterpillar, with the tariffs, Caterpillar lost 2.8%, Boeing lost 1.9%, and the farm machinery maker Deere lost 2.3%. So, interesting day back starting the second quarter, and there's certainly a lot to talk about today, Dave, as we head in. There was some reports out today. And, you know, the biggest one, well, let's start with the China and their tariffs. You know, they talk about $3 billion. They're going to add taxes hiking tariffs on some U.S. goods in response to Washington slapping duties on Chinese aluminum and steel. China said the affected 128 U.S. goods had an import value of $3 billion in 2017. You know, $3 billion when you have a $400 billion, $500 billion deficit, like, what's the point? And of course, unless I'm reading this long and I'm looking at this a little bit differently, it included wine, fresh fruit, dried fruit, nuts, steel pipes, modified ethanol, and ginseng, of all things. In a sign that China could further its retaliatory campaign against the White House, the Global Times, a newspaper published by the ruling Communist Party, warned that American politicians better realize sooner rather than later that China would never submit if the U.S. launched a trade war. China's move is in retaliation, of course, to the decision last month to impose the tariffs on increase on steel and aluminum. China's Customs Tariff Commission is increasing the tariff rate on pork products and aluminum scrap by 25%. The American pork industry sent $1.1 billion in products to China last year, making the Asian country the number three market for U.S. pork.
Yes, the European Union, Melody, and other U.S. trading partners, that includes South Korea, but not Japan, they were exempt from Trump's earlier tariff hike after a warning that they too could impose new tariffs on our products. European governments had threatened to retaliate by raising duties on American goods such as bourbon and peanut butter. The tariff spat is...
Not my peanut butter!
I know. The tariff spat is one aspect of wide-ranging tensions between Washington and Beijing over China's $276 billion trade surplus. That's China's figure. Our figure is actually $375 trillion. So somewhere in between there, presumably. Plus China's policies on technology, industry development, and access to China's state-dominated economy. Beijing faces complaints by Washington, the European Union, and other trading partners that it hampers market access despite its free trading pledges, and it's flooding global markets with improperly low-priced steel and aluminum. Observers say that, you know, the immediate impact of China's reaction here today should be limited, but investors worry the global recovery might be set back if it prompts other governments to raise import barriers. A bigger clash now appears to loom over Trump's approval of possible higher duties on nearly $50 billion of Chinese goods in a separate argument over technology policy, where China essentially forces American businesses and others doing business in China to turn over their trade secrets as a condition for the Chinese approval of doing business there. Politically, here in America, American farmers in particularly Trump-voting states in the Midwest may get hit hardest by a trade war with China. And many fear escalating trade tensions between, you know, our two countries could damage the entire global economy. For one, Nobel Prize winning economist Robert Shiller, who we've talked about in the past, said yesterday, I believe, following China's first threat of tariffs on 128 products, that uncertainty about tit-for-tat trade measures could result in an economic crisis. Shiller said, it's just chaos. It will slow down development in the future if people think that this kind of thing is likely. You know, Beijing has urged Washington to resolve the matter through dialogue and negotiation. We shall see, Melody.
Well, you know, I don't know why I'm not looking at this different. You know, people get all upset because you have these companies that have to give up their trade secrets or technology in order to do business in China. Well, that's a condition that they're well aware of going into China. So if you don't want to do that, isn't it really up to the business, the multinational corporation, whether they want to do that or not? So Am I, you know, there's other ways that China certainly has received, you know, technology and everything else from buying it, from giving, you know, it was given to them through the various administrations in the past. And so, well,
what's the big deal? You know, you raise a good point. I mean, we talked about this last week. And, you know, the prevailing thinking, I believe, is, well, you know, the U.S. doesn't force you to hand over trade secrets. The EU doesn't do that. You know, so even though, yes, it's our decision to do business to China under their conditions, nevertheless, it creates an uneven playing field. So, you know, but I don't know. The bottom line is it's a cost of doing business there that, as you said, you know about going into the deal. So I don't know where or how that piece of it ends, other than apparently a $50 billion tariff, a new tariff on additional Chinese products.
I mean, I think China has progressed to the point where, I mean, most of, I think a lot of their kids, I mean, they're educated over here in the United States. I mean, as far as technology, and it's not like they were just beginning to come along. And you know, I would think that, and I'm not sticking up for China by any means. I'm just saying, where is it where we go around saying, hey, you know, we begin to protect these multinational corporations. Maybe we should tell the multinational corporations, you can't give your trade secrets to China. You know, so I guess you can't do business there. And maybe we would have kept some of our jobs here. Maybe not all of our jobs and our factories would have gone to China. Maybe we wouldn't have exported our inflation. So yeah, things would be a little more expensive here. But wasn't that what it was all about to begin with? So I mean, it's just you know, it's I'm not sure how it's going to end, except it's not going to be good, I believe, for, you know, the people in this country, for the citizens here in this country. And it's kind of, you know, it's fascinating. It's and, you know, along with the current currency manipulations, and I don't know if we have anything today. You know, we were talking about Trump's and his attack on Amazon. Yeah, I get it. But on the other hand, you know, their stock is falling. Does a president have is he supposed to come out and attack companies and praise other ones to manipulate their stock shares, their values?
I hope it's not a new normal.
I mean, it shouldn't be that way. I'm sure it's probably happened in the past before. I don't know. I don't recall. And every time someone did reference maybe a company, there was, you know, oh, that affected the shares of a stock to the degree that it has Amazon. And I'm not sticking up for Amazon either, but I just don't think that is, it's not right.
Melody, Steve Bannon can only be, I don't know, probably laughing. I think he's beyond smiling. He can only be laughing at this turn of events and the disruption to the marketplace, the global marketplace, essentially, that this action and the words matter.
They do. I think, and to the degree that I think we're so close, I mean, they're desperate to keep things going. I mean, we're at the point where I do believe that the system is poised to. I was watching CNBC just for a few minutes this afternoon, and, you know, off the charts are indicating, they were talking about the S&P. Hey, next stop, blow the whistle, 1,800. And hopefully it holds at 1,800. all the upticks that we've seen after these big drops, then all of a sudden you have these big increases. It's just short covering, ladies and gentlemen. There's no one buying. You know, the volume is light. So again, things are being manipulated, and things are being said. It does boggle the mind sometimes, to the degree that they can keep this flourishing to the level that they have. But when you have the synchronized world input of trillions of dollars of stimulus, I guess anything is possible. But there's other things that are going on in the economic news. You have Southeastern Grocers. It's a Florida-based operator of supermarket chain Winn-Dixie and Bilo. They're going to file Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection, trying to restructure their debt. The company listed assets and liabilities in the range of $1 to $10 billion. The restructuring will reduce its debt by $500 million. The company said it will continue to operate over 580 stores. They also reported it secured 100% committed exit financing. It kind of reminds me of Toys R Us. You know, they talk about bankruptcy in October, but hey, can we borrow $2 billion just to get us through Christmas? Mm-hmm. And how well has that worked out for Toys R Us? But again, they're saying they're hurt by the growing competition from the big stores like Walmart. Hey, Walmart's been around a long time. It's like, oh, just suddenly, there's an issue. But also they name Amazon, which I found that interesting. But I guess in some of their stores, it's just not food, is it? Or is it all? Is Winn-Dixie all food, or is that other items, Dave?
I'm not 100% sure, but it's largely, if not exclusively, groceries.
Yeah. So we do know Amazon is beginning to sell food. So just kind of interesting that I think it's interesting that they mentioned Amazon.
Sell it and deliver it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But there's more retail stores that are shutting down. All 94 Aaron Brothers stores, many of which are in the Bay Area in Northern California, they're going to be shutting their doors by summer under a plan finalized by the retailer's owner, Michael's Stores.
Yes. We're jumping around a lot. There's a lot of news out there, both big and small. I was taken by an article that revealed that retailer Hudson Bay announced yesterday that it was the victim of a security breach that compromised data on payment cards consumers use at Saks and Lord & Taylor stores in North America. We can talk a little bit more about that after the break. Melody and I will be back after these short messages.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit csctalkradio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen. 1-800-375-4188. It's a great day to be buying gold. I don't know if we're going to have any more pullbacks. We didn't break 1,300, and I do believe that's the last time we're going to see 1,200 in a very, very long time, if ever again. Mark my words, write it on your calendar. Melody said this. And if we break 1,300 and get into that 1,200 level, I quit. I'm going to quit. There you go. But no, I won't.
Uh-oh.
But I'm a firm believer that we will no longer see 1,200. It's only higher from here. Sure, we're going to have pullbacks. You know, we could wipe out the $15 gain we saw today. And that's okay. But I think the fundamentals there are really beginning to come together. And I think silver is a little more volatile, but I think by the end of the week, we'll be over 17 for silver. And we won't be over 14 for gold, but I'd be a safe bet to say silver over 17. 1-800-375-4188. Visit our website, dgscoins.com, and make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter. Dave, what's next?
Well, we were just started talking about the Saks and Lord & Taylor security breach of those company cards. The one cybersecurity firm said it as evidence that millions of cards may have been compromised, which would make this breach one of the largest involving payment cards over the past year. Last really big one we heard was with Equifax. That's a company still reeling from not only having had its information breached, but how they reacted to it initially. Anyway, the Toronto-based Hudson Bay said in a statement that it had taken steps to contain the breach, but didn't say it had succeeded in confirming that its network was secure. And it also confirmed that it did not know how many payment card numbers were taken the underlying customer information. Of course, they issued a statement saying, once we have more clarity around the facts, we will notify our customers quickly and will offer those impacted free identity protection services, including credit and web monitoring. Melody.
You know, it's interesting as you hear more and more of these hacks and so forth. Heck, Atlanta, they were hacked. I think the ransom, well, they actually were held ransom. They were held, their ransom was, I think, $51,000, and then they lowered it, their computers, and they just started doing things by pen and paper. They said the city said they weren't going to pay it, and don't know the final, if they did over the weekend or not, but they were saying everything was, they didn't know what to do. They had to go back to pen and paper. So, but you know, it's just commonplace anymore. And at one time when Target had, you know, millions of accounts hacked, it was a big deal. And now it's like, you know, that's how we get used to things. But there was one thing I wanted to talk about that I thought was interesting, and that's mortgage refis, that they're sinking to historic levels. And we've seen levels not since seen since December of 08. And these are mortgage refis. And, of course, that is because of the spike in mortgage rates. The amount of borrowers who both qualify for a refi and who want one, given the higher rates, have collapsed. Consequently, the remaining homeowners seeking to refinance are overwhelmingly cashing out, also known as taking out a new mortgage that's bigger than the remaining balance on the existing one. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, they use the extra money to maintain their lifestyle.
Vacations.
But isn't this similar to what the credit lines that they used to have? But now they're actually refinancing.
Yeah, they could be, you know, a second mortgage, a home equity line of credit. I think they all, fall under that umbrella.
But over the course of 2017, the amount of money a borrower can take out of a home while still leaving 20% in it, which is what most lenders require, rose by $735 billion. And this is the largest annual increase by dollar value on record. And that brought the collective amount of the so-called tappable equity to $5.4 trillion, which is 10% more than at a pre-recession peak in 2005. I don't see any problems there, do you, Dave?
Yeah, that's the real eye-opener in that bit of news to me, anyway. I mean, we're not hearing about predatory lending, certainly anywhere close to what we had seen 10 plus years ago. But I think this tappable equity and how it's being used, wow, that's something to keep an eye on. With what do we have, 18 trillion in personal debt in our country, over 14 trillion in mortgage debt, and then to see this 5.4 trillion in tappable equity, wow. That's a lot of trouble hanging out there. If it's low hanging fruit, that's going to be grabbed by folks who just feel they need it to keep up a lifestyle.
And it all works as long as there's no hiccups, as long as no one loses a job, which I think that's coming. I definitely think you're going to see a reversal of that. I saw headlines today, was it someplace in Illinois, I think they were complaining about they have all these jobs and no one to fill them. And I'm thinking, well, get the people off of welfare, get the people off of these, you know, get them out and get them working. That's why these jobs aren't being filled. It's not like we don't have the workers, that they're all getting government checks. Well, not all of them, but, you know, but many of them. Maybe that should be addressed as far as seeing what type of these jobs that are out there to fill and get them filled. But
Well, we do know, you know, in the last go around, prior to the Great Recession, that many homeowners blew the money, their equity on purchases like vacations and boats and the like.
Yep. But,
you know, the banks were complicit too. I mean, they were offering loans that were as much as 120% of the existing value of the home. And there were, you know, on top of inflated appraisals in many cases. So, you know, this time around, it may be, not quite as serious as it was then. But, boy, I'll tell you.
Yeah, but you know what? Yet, they've taken the restrictions off, the regulations off of these banks. I've heard where they're now beginning to do all the same things that they did before. But they almost have to do it in order to keep the system going. I mean, they have to create this system to the point where, you know, there is access to these trillions of dollars, because they want those trillions of dollars to come flooding into the economies to pick up all these toys and so forth that people really can't afford. It happens time and time again, over and over. And just as you think, you know, well, they fixed that, they're not doing that anymore, you know, the banks will go back and continue to do the same thing that they've done in the past, because, you know, they make lots of money off of it, billions and billions of dollars. And homeowners today, they might be a little more conservative. Lenders might be a little bit stricter. But how long is that going to last? Last year, even with record equity, homeowners took out only $262 billion via cash-out refinances for home equity lines of credits. While that is another post-recession high in dollars, peak in dollars, it's less than the 1.25% of all available equity, which is really a four-year low. So, but when When rates are low, the primary goal of refinancing is to reduce the monthly payment. But when rates are high, borrowers have no incentive to refinance for rate reasons, and those who still refinance tend to be driven more by the desire to cash out.
Yeah, I mean, what are you going to believe? I mean, the U.S. savings rate is at a, you know, crisis lows. Credit card debt has gone completely vertical, and almost two-thirds of Americans don't have enough savings to cover a $1,000 emergency, much less, you know, to fund a reasonable retirement. So as everything in real estate, the amount of homeowner equity varies dramatically depending on location. I mean, it's highly concentrated in the highest priced state of California. In fact, 40% of the nation's total tappable equity is there. That astounds me. Seattle and Las Vegas, which have seen huge home price jumps, have seen huge equity jumps as well. Oh boy, ladies and gentlemen, be prudent. Be prudent.
Well, this morning on the earlier show, I had a question about the oil prices dropping with gold going up. Lots of times they go in tandem together.
I mean, oil prices lowered sharply in thin trading today. I mean, the geopolitical concerns that underpinned last week's rally seemed to have faded. I mean, crude futures had risen in overnight trading. That lifted by a drop in drilling activity in the United States and concerns that Washington could reintroduce sanctions against Iran, which is OPEC's third biggest oil producer. We see U.S. WTI crude futures fell $1.47 or over 2.3% by 11:30 a.m. That was after finishing the first quarter up 7.5%. By the end of the day, the price was down virtually 3%. Brent crude futures were down $1.03 or 1.5% at 11:30 a.m. And that was, let's see, down from a high of 71.28 at the end of January. And at the end of trading today, Brent price was down about 2.5%. Tensions between Saudi Arabia and Iran, two of OPEC's top three crude producers, have reportedly tempered somewhat, though traders were still covering bets that oil prices would fall heading into the long holiday weekend just a few days ago. Now, President Trump has threatened to pull out of the 2015 nuclear deal with Tehran, that under which Iran oil exports have risen. He's given the European signatories a May 12th deadline to fix the flaws, or the terrible flaws, as he calls them, of that deal. Those concerns have been amped up by the nomination of Iran hardliner Mike Pompeo to be Secretary of State and the naming of noted hawk John Bolton as the new National Security Advisor. And, of course, also weighing in the markets, as we talked about earlier, were the rising trade tensions between the U.S., China, and certainly others across the globe.
You know, it doesn't seem all that long ago that you had the multi-year low of oil at $27. That was January in 2016. That was 2 years ago. It's like,
wow.
It seems just like it was yesterday we were talking about those production cuts by OPEC and Russia. Mm. They actually started in 2017, and I think they're supposed to go to the end of this year, 2018. But you did have Russia oil output that rose in March despite the output deal. And to 10.9 million barrels per day from 10.95 barely in February. You had the Russian Energy Ministry. That was the data that they released. It also shows that Russia was ahead of the United States as the world's biggest crude producer. You have an output, the output in Iraq, OPEC's second biggest producer, has also been above the agreement and around 5 million barrels in early 2018. The Iraqi cabinet on Sunday approved a plan to raise the nation's daily crude output capacity of 6.5 million barrels by 2022. So you have an uptick in prices that's helped to support a surge in U.S. drilling, which has boosted U.S. production to a record 10.43 million barrels per day, taking it past top exporter Saudi Arabia. U.S. drillers, they cut 7 oil rigs in a week ending March 29, bringing the total down to 797, the first decline in 3 weeks. The rig count is closely watched as an indicator of future U.S. oil output. So why do you cut oil rigs when the price is high and we're hitting record productions? If this is an indicator of future U.S. oil output, that's not a good sign, is that now?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting development.
So 1-800-375-4188. I have some dimes, 90% silver dimes. We're going to do that. I can do those in $25 face value bags like we have. I also have some quarters, 90%. Maybe I'll do some mixed bags, $25 face value mixed bags of dimes and quarters. How about that? Makes it easier to count because we do count them twice. It's first counted by a machine, and then I go through it and pull out any of the ugly coins and so forth that I don't consider to be quality. That I, you know, so you know, I pull them out. So they basically get counted twice, and so we can do 13 times 25. They can be $330 by two packages. Will include free shipping, $330, $25 face value. And so that's a good little special on that. You know, we haven't talked about the Treasury. We have about 30 seconds left on the 2 and 10-year Treasury notes. They fell to a dangerously low 47 basis points last Thursday, Dave. That's the narrowest spread since October 2007, and that was a few months before the Great Recession began. So a narrow spread means the yield curve is flattening, and the yield curve plots bond yields across Treasury maturities. A flattening yield curve happens when the difference between short and long-term bond yields gets smaller or narrows. So in an upward sloping or normal yield curve, longer-term yields are higher than short-term yields, and it is typical, especially in an expanding economy. And we're going to expand right into our break, and we'll be right back right after these two short messages. You're listening to Financial Survival. Tell me again tonight.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm joined with my co-host, Dave Allen. Going into the break, we were talking about the 10-year yield, Treasury yield, and the 2-year yield. Why is the yield curve important, Dave? Tell the listeners.
Well, Melody, the yield curve happens to be the most accurate predictor of recessions. And that point was confirmed in a new research paper released last week by the San Francisco Fed. The report says that a negative spread, they call it the term spread, term as in 2-year, 10-year, the term spread between the 2-year and 10-year Treasury yields predicted all 9 recessions since 1955. There is only one false positive in the mid-1960s when an inversion was followed by an economic slowdown, but not an official recession. Now, the delay between the term spread turning negative and the beginning of a recession has ranged in that period of time between 6 months, which would take us to roughly October, and 24 months during that period. The spread between 2 and 10-year yields is a closely watched piece of the curve for its signs of economic health. You know, as we've talked about often, Melody, the bellwether 10-year Treasury bond yield is tied to key consumer interest rates for such things as mortgages, car loans, and credit cards, and so forth. An inversion between these two maturities, in other words, if the yield on the 2-year is higher than the yield on the 10-year, that indicates a high probability of a recession in the next 6 months to 2 years.
I have a question. I don't know if there's an answer to this question.
What?
We know that the Fed manipulates interest, and they thought that they would be able to adjust the rates in order to prevent booms and busts, that they would be able to control monetary policy to the degree that there would be, you know, to avoid these great recessions and so forth. I guess to some degree they've been successful, even though we've had 9, as you mentioned. So by adjusting the rates, wouldn't they pre-know? I mean, wouldn't they be the drivers of the economy to the degree of rates affecting and getting what they want at that any point in time? Are you following me?
Yeah, I'm following you. I unfortunately don't know the answer to that, or I'm not quite sure how to best answer that. I can't recall specifics, but has there been a time in our lifetime, or even since the 70s or 80s, when a Fed has actually tried to run the economy into recession? I can't imagine that's the case, but there are a host of other factors that come into play. True. You know, with in how what's going on in the economy other than just interest rates. So I think it's an interesting question that probably deserves a, you know, a deeper look. And we can do just that and report back to listeners on a later program.
All right. Well, going back to, we know that the Fed is scheduled to have 3 rate hikes this year and says it's going to push rates as high as 3.1% in 2020, slightly overshooting its long projected target of 2.8%.
Yeah, and after Fed Chair Jerome Powell's testimony to Congress last month, many economists expect 4 rate hikes this year and a steeper path of rates. You know, Powell said at his first press conference after the last rate hike that an inversion doesn't necessarily mean a recession will follow. Other Fed leaders, including Cleveland Fed Reserve President Loretta Mester, agree, although this latest report coming out of the San Francisco Fed says that if the 2 and 10 invert, you know, there's almost always a recession that's going to follow.
You know, on the other hand, aren't there more cautious members on the Fed's on the FOMC? You have the St. Louis Fed President James Bullard. He wants to go a little slower because of the risk of a yield curve inversion.
Well, exactly. And in fact, Morgan Stanley analysts called the flattening curve a potential warning this week, adding that it's a key measure of concern, signaling that the Fed is getting ahead of itself.
Well, the doves on the Fed have suggested that the current environment of low interest rates may be a reason to worry a little less about a recession.
Well, that's true. In such an environment, they argue that increases in short-term policy rates may slow down the economy less than usual, and low long-term rates aren't seen as pessimistic, but as a new normal. The Fed's paper, however, dismisses those claims. It says, while these hypotheses, and I'm quoting now, have some intuitive appeal, our analysis, that is the Fed's, shows that they aren't substantiated by statistical analysis. Now, exactly why yield curve inversion has predictive power isn't obvious. However, one explanation might be that a flatter yield curve makes it less profitable for banks to borrow short-term and lend long, which shuts off a funding source to a possible expansion.
Well, I know you like David Stockman, and he has some warnings about these yields and about some of the comments in the late last year that he made.
Well, I do. I didn't always, but his alarm bells are ringing loudly and truly, and I think it bears repeating that, you know, late last year, economist and former Reagan budget director David Stockman warned, we are heading for a thundering collision in the bond market that will drive yields upward far more than the market's expecting. Stockman believes that bond prices are going to collapse when their interest rates begin to rise beyond expectations. Stock prices will then fall, and fall hard, when the underlying cheap debt, massive stock buybacks, and other artificials that have been propping up the market today finally reverses. I mean, look around you. What do you see? Interest rates are rising, many say beyond expectations. The Fed's already intimated a possible 4th rate increase in 2018.
And I'm going to go back and quote Bill Gross, the ex-PIMCO bond king. And he says when that 10-year got to 2.60, we went over 2.60, and that's when we really began to see the volatility in these markets. The next level is 3%. And, you know, we see the highs, we see the lows, it comes back, it goes up, it goes down. A lot of volatility in these markets started after that 2.60, and now he's calling the 3%. And you have these stock buybacks that are historic levels. We've already seen 2 stock market corrections this year. It's April 1st, 2nd. And it's not an April Fool's.
Yeah, well,
yeah, we just ended the first quarter.
And not to mention gratuitous tax cuts and this monster spending increases. You know, they're going to kick the annual budget deficit into trillion-dollar territory. They're going to push our crushing national debt toward catastrophic heights. And the yield curve is flattening and headed towards a possible recession prophesized inversion. things are not looking good.
No, and Stockman's warning seems to be coming to fruition. A paper market crash is coming. A recession is right around the corner. And what do you do to protect yourselves? I mean, we have a fiat currency. That's really why you buy gold. You convert your paper money into real money. But that's a real reason why you buy gold. It protects your purchasing power during these times of stress in the paper markets and geopolitical situations and hedge against inflation, all of the reasons, the insurance policy. Gold is that insurance policy that protects your wealth. This is why all the reasons that we talk about today, all the reasons that we're giving you is all the reasons why you should be buying gold and silver, converting those paper dollars into real money, because that's what's going to count and that's what's going to protect your purchasing power. And so I do believe that a recession is coming. It is right around the corner.
Well, who knows for sure, but I'll tell you what, we should all keep a close eye on this two to 10 year spread, because I think, based particularly on this latest research paper, which confirms earlier findings, the proof, I think, lies within.
You know, if you can't discount gold and silver, you know, we'll give you help in how to put together a portfolio. But you have to have a plan. You have to know, you know, somewhat, and you have to let us know what you're looking to put into the market. And, you know, how do you protect yourselves? We're here to give you information. We're not financial planners, but we have information. And we can give you this information so that you can make informed decisions. There's a lot of good analysts out there. I'm not going to say analysts, they're newsletter writers. They got great information providing why people need to own gold and silver. I just disagree with their investment advice. You know, because
that's pretty fundamental.
I mean, you know, I mean,
nice guys, but don't listen to what they say.
When I first got into the business, every gold dealer in this country pretty much talked about the fundamentals of gold and silver. And somehow along the way, it's gotten distorted. And we competed with price and with the onset of the... half of these people, you would never know of them without the internet. And so they didn't come into the conservative arena to help people take a conservative approach to their investments and to get an understanding of what money is and why it's important to own gold and silver. After the 2008 Great Recession, you had all these Wall Streeters, a lot of them, not all of them, but a lot of them come into this area. It was an easy pitch. You know, gold was hitting 1900. Everything else was crashing. So it was an easy buck to be made. Then you see them disappear. Now I'm beginning to see names when there's been pressure on gold and silver for the past how many years. A lot of these names just disappeared. Now all of a sudden they're back getting quoted, you know, getting touted around and all the programs. And all of a sudden they're gurus again. And it's frustrating. Because here we talk about it every single day. We didn't go away. We didn't go run and hide if we were wrong and so forth. But that's what these guys do. They just jump from market to market to where they'll make the biggest money. And they really don't care about you. And I didn't mean to get off on that tangent there. But it's frustrating. And I don't believe 5 and 10%. Of your assets should be in gold. I think it should be much bigger. I don't think 5 and 10% is really going to protect your assets like you think it's going to. It's just like your home. If you have $250,000 home, are you going to insure it for 5 and 10%? I don't think so. I mean, what good is it for you? You know, so you get your bathroom fixed. That's not going to help you. So, and I think when you're buying your gold, you should also look at it in the same manner. So no, I think 5 or 10% in today's world. When I first got into this business, we were recommending 15 to 20%. But 25 years ago, it was a lot calmer world 25 years ago than it is today. So it does
more volatility today, but just as if not more, I think more importantly, I think there's a lot more manipulation going on today.
Yes.
Now, not just in the paper markets, but in the precious metal markets as well. And I think that gives rise to a little bit of, I don't know, not pessimism, that's not the word I'm looking for, frustration. We're just seeing, maybe it is a new normal, where the prices aren't moving in line with how they used to, that what was the steadfast rule isn't necessarily so today. It makes it more important that we educate ourselves by listening to shows such as this, by reading as much as we can American Survival Newsletter and other related news about gold and silver and other commodities. Stay informed, folks.
And I think too, the majority of the population were older. 25 years ago, 30 years ago, if you lost your job, you didn't have a problem going out finding another one. You didn't lose your life savings. Today, your life savings are at risk.
And we're interviewing with robots. Yes. They're the new HR directors of the world.
800-375-4188. I'll be back tomorrow with Pastor Butch Paul. Until then, thank you, Dave. Until then, be safe. Good night. And God bless.
Go Nova!
Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.